Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout podcast, where two bearded film fans watch the best and worst horror movies of all time. My name is Luke Condor, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr. Ben Errington. How the devil are you?
I'm all right, mate. I'm okay. it was my turn to be ill. We had a week off when you were ill. Then I thought, I'll wait a week and then I'll have my week off.
He's showing me up with his sniffles. If you want to see some sniffles, check out these nostrils.
Check out these nostrils. So it's a grade sniffles I had. Yep, but I'm better now, so let's bloody get on with it, eh? Get on with it.
Is that have we got any news? Have you looked up any? You just got back from the cinema, so you maybe not had time to put
No. Luke, I take this very seriously.
Yeah, go on.
Got some news ready to go. So obviously we missed a few bits that we could have probably discussed last week, but so it's a bit of a catch up news wise, although I haven't got loads. Don't know if you heard about this. Sam Raimi.
I've heard of him.
Directing.
You've
heard of him. He's all right, isn't he? Directing Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Now, apparently this has been reported by Variety. I don't think it's officially confirmed by official sources, either Sam himself or Marvel Studios. Obviously, we lost Scott Derrickson on the film. He didn't die.
Yeah, he died then. He's alive.
He was let go after creative differences. And obviously, one thing we did hear about this was that it was going to be very horror-orientated or perhaps have horror elements in it. I guess when Scott Derrickson got let go, we thought, okay, well, it's probably not going to be a horror film then, now. But now Sam Raimi's been added. First superhero movie directed, obviously, since the Spider-Man trilogy, but first superhero movie directed in quite a while. Is it since Spider-Man 3 or Drag Me to Hell? What was the last one? He did. He's been producing a lot.
Oz.
He's,
it was the Wizard of Oz one, I think.
Correct. You're correct. Yes. Oz the Great and Powerful. So, 1 point to you in trivia.
Thank you.
So his name's been attached to a lot of things with Ghost House Pictures, Crawl, Don't Breathe, and recently The Grudge. His name's been sort of slapped about because people think, you know, he can flex his horror muscles and we'll get a different sort of audience. But how do you feel about him if he's possibly going to direct this in the Multiverse of Madness?
Mate, after watching the film we're talking about today, anything can happen. Anything can happen. Who knows what the results will be? Yeah.
Who knows? Anything can happen. He might make Spider-Man 4 and just call it Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
And it might be
Doctor Strange is there as well.
Yeah.
And it might be great, exactly. So yeah, that's that. if that got confirmed, that would probably be nice. I'd like it confirmed. I saw Scott Derrickson and the screenwriter dude. Sorry, his name escapes me currently.
Robert
and
Cargill.
The screenwriter dude. Might be. I'm sure it is. You're right. No, there we go. I don't know. I'm doubting you. They both voiced their apparent pleasure at this inevitable appointment. So there we go. Everyone's happy. They're probably not happy. They're probably deep down fuming. Like, Sam Raimi, eh? You get Sam Raimi in. Because they must have known that he was like, he must have been circling it before they eventually booted Scott Derrickson off of it.
Who knows how it works?
I don't know. Who knows how it works? But I'd assume that a big studio would have somebody in mind.
I'm sure they've been paid a fucking bomb.
Yeah, yeah. It's like football manager, ain't it? You don't sack a football manager until you've got another one lined up. That's what I reckon, anyway. Similar sort of thing.
Yeah.
What else? So, got a trailer last week for a film called Spiral, which is got the tagline from the Book of Saul. So obviously it's in the Saul universe. It's essentially a sequel. Is it like the ninth or the eighth part in the franchise?
Yeah.
Franchise that I've kind of been checked out of for a long, long time, since maybe number three.
Yeah, I told you my distaste for the last one, Jigsaw, before.
I didn't watch that. But no,
you don't.
To be fair,
please don't.
Did you watch this trailer, Luke?
Spiral? I did a scrub watch, so I just kind of straight through and thought,
scrub through.
Yeah.
To be fair, it kind of looks no different to anything that's come before it, except that, you know, there's a spiral instead of a
saw.
Well, I don't know.
Jigsaw puzzle, whatever it was saw. For.
Yeah.
I'm a little more open-minded. Darren Lynn Bousman, who's made this one. I think he made the second one, was better
and
than
the fourth.
And the fourth one. Okay, I don't know about that one. He also made the rock opera thing, the one with Giles from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You seen that?
Rock of Ages?
No. Repo Man, the genetic opera. You seen that?
It's insane. No, I know what that is, though.
And he's an interesting guy. He tours, he does like interactive theatre, horror theatre type stuff. I've listened to him on interviews fairly recently, last year or so, and he's talking about Saw, and he seemed very excited. So I'm open-minded. And, you know, Chris Rock's in it, Samuel L. Jackson. People, you might be right, they might just be cameos. But
now, yeah. I feel like from watching that trailer, the Samuel Jackson scene, I can imagine it being an opening scene. He's not in the rest of the movie. Chris Rock, obviously, a bit more of a bigger role. He's producing as well, I think. That's right.
See, that again, so Chris Rock's producing it as well. So I do wonder, it feels like they're trying. It does have that kind of bleached cop look. Do you know what I mean?
I really like the poster. There's a very nice color gradient running through it, which is, I've always got a lot of time for. I don't know. There's something about it. So John Crinan, former guest on the podcast, but also member of Horror Hangout Board of Advisors, said it looks like one of those like comedy spoofs that you see on like SNL or something, where it's like a mocked up trailer for something, and Chris Rock happens to be in it, and
like the Rock.
Then we're gonna get like a ridiculous.
And also, what's his name? Who played Hellboy? Not Ron Perlman. The other Hellboy.
Oh, David Harbour when he did
Groucho.
Groucho. It looks and feels like that. Now, nothing in the trailer corner sort of made me think, okay, this is going to be something completely different. It did kind of look like everything else. But, you know, I'm happy to be proven wrong. I'd like that. But if it's the same old crap, then they officially need to put a bullet in the head of this franchise, because it's been, you know, these death throes aren't pleasing anybody, are they? Jigsaw. But I think we heard the same thing about Jigsaw when that was kind of announced. I was going to be completely different. It ain't called Saw, it's called something else. Called Jigsaw. You bloody wait. And that was a load of hot shite.
from
what you say. I've not seen it.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Any other news?
Blah, 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 blah. So, fresh off the back of Oscar success, Bong Joon-ho.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Parasite won Best Picture, won Best Director, won Best International Feature. Apparently, the next film he's going to be directing is going to be an action horror film. It was one of his next projects. Korean film located in Seoul. That's how you say it, isn't it? Korean
Seoul.
City.
Seoul.
Korean in Seoul. Has unique elements of horror and action. It's difficult to define the genre of my films, he said. So obviously he made The Host before, which is a really good action
family
horror
drama.
Monster movie. family drama, which I think a lot of those family dynamics I did kind of see in Parasite as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's pretty good at doing this stuff. So that'd be pretty cool.
Snowpiercer, it's one of my favorite films.
100%. Yeah.
Fantastic.
It's a great one. It's good that he's got the recognition. Hopefully this is going to be like his projects going forward are going to get like bigger budgets. And
also, he looks kind of mad.
A light shine. He looks kind of mad.
He's got like a iconoclastic looking mad director sort of look. So, you know, he's one of the good ones.
Everything I've read of him as well, like interviews and stuff, he does seem like a nice guy.
Yeah.
And like he's kind of against the grain a little bit in terms of big budget studios and capitalism and things.
I've still not seen Okja. I think that's on Netflix.
No, me neither. So. Me neither, yeah. I've not seen it. So so that's that. Lock and Key is on Netflix now.
Oh, man. So obviously, have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Have you?
Well, yeah. I'll talk a bit about it.
Okay, we'll get to that. So that's on. I probably will watch it. Obviously, a great comic book series, which I've read a few volumes of, I think.
Yeah, the comic book. The comic book is fantastic.
Okay. Last bit of news is that we discussed this back late last year, but the Blumhouse and Universal film The Hunt is apparently finally got a release date. It's going to be released on Friday the 13th of March. Obviously, it was dropped before because there were some attacks in America, weren't they? And people thought that the subject matter was maybe a little bit insincere to put in a film at that particular time. So it got delayed by a few months. So could be good. I think I watched the trailer. I think it looks fairly interesting. Betty Gilpin is in it, who's in Glow and various other things. She's good. I like her. But it's written by Damon Lindelof as well. So
okay,
it's obviously off the back of Watchmen, which is a big success.
Yeah.
So
interesting. Yeah, I'd be quite curious to watch that one.
Yeah. And that's pretty much it for news that I've got. I mean, there was other news, but we can't talk about it all. It'd be here all night, mate.
Okay. Well, let me just quickly jump in with Lock and Key then. I really like the comic books. I think the art style, Gabriel Rodriguez's art, is perfect. Like, it's note perfect for that story. I watched... You can tell exactly the kind of tone that they've gone for with this in the opening credits, maybe like the first 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. If you like Riverdale, Sabrina, and those shows, you're probably going to like this. If you don't, I'm the one of the people who don't enjoy those particular those TV shows. That sort of slick, teen, crazy, horror-tinged fantasy. I guess fantasy drama with a horror tinge to it. Although Sabrina's more.
Weird that they've gone for that, because I wouldn't necessarily
not quite as Riverdale-y as Riverdale, but it is on that, you know, in that part of the map.
Give us a brief rundown of the premise of
Lock and Key. A mother and three children. The dad and family is murdered for some reason. We don't find out for a little while. They go to the house where he grew up, Lovecraft House. There's lots of cool little horror mentions like that. And when they get there, there's a ghost in the well, and there's all these keys that have magical powers. Yeah, I don't know. It feels like it's made me realize how much Gabriel Rodriguez's art brought to it, because it added a really sort of classy horror note to the story, and that's just gone. It's not for me. I watched about half an hour of it, and maybe that's not enough, but I was like, I'm not the target audience for this.
So I packed up
my bags
and left
the house. Yeah.
I packed up my balls and left. Obviously, we got another Joe Hill adaptation recently, Nosferatu. I've only seen a couple of episodes of, but they seem to really capture that like really well. So that's quite disappointing that you mentioned that about.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Old Lucky.
Who knows?
Maybe you are wrong.
We've both seen Underwater, which we'll talk about next week, which I think pairs quite well with tonight's film, in a way, which we'll talk about probably.
Yeah, I mean, I'd watch them back to back, I guess. Why the hell not?
The only other thing I've seen that is worth mentioning is Uncut Gems. Have you seen Uncut Gems?
I sure have.
Okay. Adam Sandler plays a jeweler in New York called Howie. And he's got a plan to make a ton of money from this rock. But he's taking loans on in one hand and he's paying people off on the other. He's got people he owes a lot of money to. He just keeps parlaying his winnings into deeper and deeper debts because he wants to win financially or win something big in the end of the day. And it's so tense. It's by the Safdie brothers who did Good Time. Yes. So it's got that same similar... vibe.
It's one of the most anxiety, same similar vibe. It's one of the most anxiety-inducing films I've seen in a long time. It's just got this classic look, which I think is similar to what Good Time had. Shot on film. There's these really nice like focus pulls, and there's just something that looks really, really classic and like classic and classy.
Yeah, you could say that.
The whole film. Like, you could say that, yeah. Oh, and I did say that. But it's funny as well, you know. It's not a comedy, but it is funny. I found myself laughing at a lot. I think laughing out of anxiety, laughing out of anxious. It was an anxious laugh.
Good Time did a good job of giving you that anxiety. But this film, there's one bit where I was like almost unable to watch because he's making choices. You're like, why are you doing that to yourself? But I don't know why. I think I tweeted about this. Why do I enjoy films that hurt me like so much, like Green Room or these films that are like so tense and so horrendous to watch, but they're kind of joyful in a way as well.
It's like it's for the same reason that people enjoy horror films is because we like to experience these extreme emotions. It's something, it's like escapism, isn't it? Because I mean, I don't know about you. I mean, I can get anxious, but I don't find myself in a constant state of like, So it is like escapism. You can experience those tense emotions and then you tell people about that experience you had, you know? I really enjoyed it. And I kind of want to watch it again because I saw it a little while ago, like before it went on Netflix, and now it's gone on Netflix. And I'm a bit like, everyone's talking about it. It makes me want to see it again. He won Best Actor, obviously, at the Independent Film Awards.
Did you see his speech?
Spirit Awards. I did see his speech, which
was
really hilarious.
So it's not really a horror movie, but it feels in that thriller, I guess, maybe. But it's a bit long, I think. 2 hours, 2 hours and 15 minutes. It felt a little bit long, but it was, it's great.
Good film. I put it on real late. I put it on maybe 11 o'clock.
Yeah, that's
thinking I'll watch a little bit of this and then I'll go to sleep. But it kept me engaged. Like even though I was tired, I was like, I'm gonna keep watching.
Yeah,
is that all you've seen?
I think so. Yeah.
I've got a little list of things I've seen, and I'll rattle them off quick.
Yeah,
I'm gonna give it into great depth. Did I talk about The Grudge last time we?
Oh, what, sorry?
I don't think I did. The Grudge.
No.
Okay, so let's just talk about this very briefly. So I heard terrible things about it when the reviews were coming out. It was getting absolutely slammed, but I thought, you know, I'm going to go watch it. So I actually paid money, went to the cinema to watch this. Completely empty screen. Nobody wanted to get grudged.
Yeah. Underwater was only empty for me. I don't know about for you.
Yeah, moderately empty today, yeah. Anyway, The Grudge is probably one of the laziest films I've seen in this genre. The 2004 remake wasn't great, but it's a masterpiece compared to this. Basically, there's no plot in this film, and every single heavy-handed scare tactic you can ever imagine is in this film. Now, I discussed it like this. So every single scene is walks into a dark room. Am I going to be all right, or is there going to be something bad that happens in this room? Oh, wait, there's The Grudge. Next scene. And basically, it had all these different timeline jumps. Mm. Like, it was like three different timelines, all these different people. Nobody ever, there was no shred of like character or plot or anyone wanted to do anything that would like break the curse or find out about the curse or fight against the curse. Just like people get grudged.
Okay.
People get grudged for 90 minutes.
That's a bit of a shame because of I can't remember the director's name, Nicholas Pesci or something like that. He apparently made some good films. I think Piercing was one of them. Maybe I'm getting that mixed up. But apparently he does some good stuff.
P- piercing in the eyes of my mother. Yeah, but this was this is it's hard to say, isn't it? Because I bet I had probably had quite a lot of money behind it, but it was really, really poor. Like, it's I don't mind getting angry at a film that's so bad, but I was pretty frustrated watching this. Okay, I'll rattle off a few other things I've watched. So I saw Daniel Isn't Real. Which was pretty great, actually. Two really good lead performances. It's sort of like someone described it as like a horror Drop Dead Fred, like a imaginary friend thing. Loads of really good ideas. Loads of the ideas like executed really well. Just a pretty cool, just like a really cool film as well. Like it didn't have that sort of Riverdale, Sabrina, which I was worried it was going to have from some of the visuals I'd seen.
Yeah.
Nope. Nice and gruesome in places. I also saw David Cronenberg's Videodrome for the first time. It's on Netflix currently.
Is it really? I love that film.
Yeah.
That's a kind of a dirty midnight sort of watch that makes you feel a little bit wrong for watching it.
I did watch it pretty late.
You love it.
So I think the practical effects are amazing. Like, it's Cronenberg's body
TV
horror.
Stuff.
Dialed all the way up. Debbie Harry's in it, who's pretty great. I felt a bit dazed by like the plot, maybe in the final third, like I kind of didn't know what was going on. Maybe that's the point, but yeah, I kind of liked it. And then I also watched a couple more films that I've kind of like missed over the last few years, or I say last few years, but with this one's even older than that. This was probably like 10 years old now, getting on for 10 years old. You're Next.
Oh, that's great.
So I thought it was a pretty cool home invasion movie.
The price to skyrocket in that film.
Bloody hell, the price has gone right up. I'm terrified. I thought we had a really solid like leading lady who was fighting back against the home invaders.
Home inflators.
Home inflators.
This is a bounty castle.
And there's loads of gore. I thought it was good.
Yeah, it's a nice little ending there as well, I remember.
Yeah, pretty good ending. And then I also saw The Boy, because the sequel for that is coming out this month.
Yeah.
So... In terms of the premise, like, it's a bit inconsistent. Like, it tries to be one thing, then it tries to be another thing, and it doesn't really explain itself as it goes along.
It's even more inconsistent now if you're in the trailer for the sequel.
Oh, yeah. The trailer for the sequel, we're a completely different film again.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of creepy in places, but I was like, I find it quite amusing, the fact that it's just such a stupid... Well, not just a twist, but like the whole premise was just all a bit stupid. I found just like little boy Brahms. He's like a little porcelain dolly, and we've got to keep look after him, but he's got to be all right. You'd be like, you guys are insane. See you later.
I don't think you would. But, I mean, they're paying you, aren't they? So
yeah, they're paying you.
Not you.
And I also saw last one, not horror.
Yeah.
Last one, Birds of Prey, the Harley Quinn movie. Which I thought was pretty good. It was camp, colourful, over the top, good like girl gang film. This is weird because I've read a lot of things about it not making much money, but in terms of its budget, it's made that back and it's done pretty well internationally. I think they were looking at the sort of American figures and comparing it to things like Justice League and Batman versus Superman, which had like a budget four times as big as it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I'm sure it'll make its money enough. It reminded me in places a bit like the Schumacher Batman films, but not to its detriment. Like Ewan McGregor's character was like really over the top. Like, there's a lot of really good comic book stuff, which I think perhaps the DC universe hasn't done. Did it with Aquaman. It did it a bit more with Justice League because it tried to, I think it went too dark with Batman versus Superman, tried to be a bit more campy in Justice League, went like over the top with Aquaman, but it really worked, I feel. And with this, it kind of feels a bit the same. Like, it's kind of, it wasn't perfect. I had a few problems with it, but I think for the most part, like Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn is she's one of those actresses playing one of those characters where she's completely embodied that person now. And I thought it was all right. Like, it's weird because some parts of it feel like it's trying, style-wise, it's still going, it's leaning into that Suicide Squad stuff a bit, where like there's big text on the screen and voiceovers and, you know, one-liners. But this, it like worked a lot more with this. And apparently, the guy
who Deadpool dollar, you know, with the voiceovers and the, is she breaking the fourth wall and stuff? Or
no, it's not in that, but it's not far off from it. They possibly were going for the Deadpool dollars, but it didn't feel like that to me.
Okay,
it felt like it had its own identity. But
I'm actually more excited for the new Suicide Squad film because James Gunn is making it.
Yep.
And he's done one of the best superhero movies with Super, which is incredibly dark and funny. And I feel like if he's going to do a similar thing with this one, he's piled on the characters that the actors he's got in the film.
He pretty much perfected the ensemble superhero film with Guardians of the Galaxy, didn't he?
He's gonna do it. He's gonna do it good, I think. And I've not really read many Suicide comic books, so I don't really know what they're going for. But
Suicide comic books.
Yeah, but
just bloody kill yourself, Luke.
I'm excited for that one. I will watch Birds of Prey as well, or Harley Quinn, whatever it's called. But I'll tell you what,
I'll watch it. Cool, mate.
Is that all the stuff you've seen?
That's it. Yeah. So I guess I've watched quite a lot of stuff, but I've just been having a little bit of a catch up, you know, with things.
I don't know if I talked about it before. We have watched something else. We just finished The Good Place, which is not horror in any sense of the word, but it's a wonderfully funny and tight comedy that's wrapped up now perfectly well.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's one of my favorite sitcom type comedies I've seen in a long time.
I've heard good things.
It is really good. Yeah, it's really funny. Okay, so over that's The Colour Out of Space, which...
Colour Out of Space, you bastard.
Do you want to tell us about it?
Yeah. Do you want to give you a little bit about it? So Colour Out of Space is a 2019 American science fiction cosmic horror film directed by Richard Stanley, based on the short story The Colour Out of Space by H.
The Colour Out of Space.
By H. The colour out of Spain. Have you been to Spain? You've got some colour on your face. You've really caught the sun. Colour Out of Space by H.P. Lovecraft stars Nicolas Cage, Jolie Richardson, Madeline Arthur, and Tommy Chong, amongst other people. Stanley's first feature film since his firing from The Island of Dr. Moreau, which didn't end up that good either, did it? Val Kilmer.
I've not seen it.
Oh my God,
I've seen the documentary. What it's called? There's a documentary about it. Have you seen it? It's
I don't think so.
Pretty amazing. Okay, this film is a weird film because Richard Stanley, who was a South African guy who in England made a film called Hardware years ago, which is a film that ripped off a comic book from 2000 AD. Although I'm not entirely sure that really holds up. He goes on to make The Island of Dr. Moreau, gets fired halfway through, disappears on the island where they're making it. He reappears wearing like cat makeup or an animal makeup, and no one knows it's him, but he's living on the island and he's in the movie, and no one knows why he's there. Disappears.
He's real life.
Yeah, disappears again. He goes to South Africa, lives, I don't know, somewhere. He studies magic in a sort of Alan Moore sense of the word magic, I believe. He just goes off. We don't hear from him for ages. And meanwhile, across the planet, Elijah Wood, the little amazing little hobbit guy who's really into cult and horror cinema, starts a cult and horror cinema.
Amazing little hobbit guy.
Starts a production company called Spectrovision, which makes amazing films like Mandy and Beyond the Black Rainbow. Well, I've not seen that. But, you know, that's the vibe. And then they find Richard Stanley and they say, why don't you make a really old H.P. Lovecraft short story into a film? And it just doesn't sound like it's even plausible. That's not, how is that going to work? This guy's not made a film for 20 years. The last one he made, he like lost his marble or something. He lost his marbles, disappeared, was smoking weed in the jungle or whatever. He makes this film. It should not work. It should not come together, but it does. And this film, it's the production of this film, in my opinion, is a miracle. It's a weird one. It's
a modern day miracle.
Yeah, it is.
Premise-wise, it's a secluded farm is struck by a strange meteorite which has apocalyptic consequences for the family living there and possibly the world. Have you read the short story?
Yeah, have you? It's
I read it a while ago, but I didn't remember much of it, so I listened to like a little narrated version recently. Yeah, and I think they've captured a lot of it pretty well.
Yeah, I think they've managed to capture the actual Lovecraft vibe, the cosmic horror vibe, and the small town in the New England countryside, wherever. And they've also managed to mix in the Stuart Gordon, Brian Usner 80s schlocky side of Lovecraft films, like From Beyond and those sort of films. It's managed to capture both, really, really quite well. This reminded me of the tone, the look and the feel and the music and everything. It reminded me of Annihilation a lot, but this doesn't take itself anywhere near as seriously.
No, I got the Annihilation vibes, definitely.
It feels way more tongue-in-cheek and playful and sort of rebellious. It feels like it's not going to work, and in some places it doesn't work. But I kind of preferred this to Annihilation in some ways. It felt wrong.
I don't think I was totally into Annihilation. I thought it was all right, but I think I preferred this.
Yeah.
There we go, that's the end.
So we've got Nicolas Cage in it. Again, why would you put Nicolas Cage in this film? And why would you give him his, tell him to go full on crazy Nicolas Cage? Because there's times in this where he's doing a Donald Trump impression, I'm sure. Like, he does his bipolar thing.
Yeah.
And he starts talking like Donald Trump.
That was strange. It's like he was full Cage, but then also does a Donald Trump impersonation, which is odd, but kind of funny.
Jolie Richardson is Teresa Gardner. I think that's the wife, right?
Yeah, not seen her in anything for a while, I was thinking.
Madeline Arthur as Lavinia Gardner. I recognise her, the daughter from something or other.
She's in this film.
Oh yeah. Brendan Meyer as Benny Gardner. He was the teenage son.
Yeah.
He's in the OA, which is also pretty good. Julian Hilliard as Jack Gardner. As Julian Hilliard, was he the little kid from The Haunting of Hill House? Like, he was much younger.
That's
I recognize his sort of geeky, cute face.
His little face.
Yeah. And then Elliot Knight as Ward Phillips, who is it's an amazing casting choice, really. H.P. Lovecraft is well known as a massive racist. So they decided to make the main main narrator of the story.
H.P. Lovecraft, what you got to be racist for, mate? Bloody hell. Stories are good.
Yeah.
You massive racist.
Yeah. It's a weird... tonally, think Annihilation, but mix in... Don't give it anywhere near as much money. Don't give it anywhere near as much... care and attention to detail. and also about two-thirds of the way into the film, just expect things to not really make that much sense, but it's fine, just enjoy it. There's also some magic stuff that we open with what's her face, the daughter. She's like doing magic spells down by the lake.
So yeah, she's kind of doing magic spells, maybe just doing a bit of Wiccan rituals, mucking about. I think it's kind of supposed to be linked to her mother's health, so we understand quite early on that the mother of the family, Teresa, has had like a mastectomy, so I'm assuming maybe she's had, is it cancer or
something like that,
illness. But that's why they've moved to this rural farm, because they're supposed to be like helping her recuperate or get away from the hustle and bustle of city life so she can get better. So he's growing tomatoes. He's got some alpacas, which he's milking.
Why alpacas? That's such a...
It's apparently like milk choice. Is delicious. I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah. As the daughter is out there doing his spell.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
After she comes across Ward, who is like a water specialist, hydrologist, he's surveying the water.
He just
table.
Loves it,
yeah. Which is a big table.
Yeah, so I think there's going to be like a. I think he works for somebody who's going to like maybe make a hydroelectric dam around
this place.
Yeah. So he's going to. He's out there doing a bit of research.
Yeah. The mother of the family, although she's had a mastectomy, she's also like, I believe, the main breadwinner of the family. She's like. Yeah. Trading stocks from the attic. She's got like a little 4G
she's
connection.
Always got bad, yeah. She's always got bad Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
I feel so stressed out every time she was like losing connection because I was like, oh, fuck it all.
Yeah.
We all know the problem. Imagine you lived out in the sticks like that and you had to rely on talking to someone. I'll trade this stock, please. Sorry? I'll trade this stock right now.
I don't think in the modern world where people are like, foreign exchange market and stuff. I don't think they're on the phone. They're just tapping and clicking, surely.
Tapping and clicking, mate. Come on, Jolie. Could be saving so much time and money.
So, what's his face? The older brother is smoking weed with the local hermit. Ezra is. Oh, it's the guy.
He's doing what? with the local hermit. Tommy Chung.
He's. Oh, yeah. Well, I always think of him as Leo. From that 70s show. But, yeah.
Never bother with that. Cheech and Chong.
Yeah. I've not seen any Cheech and Chong. Maybe I'm missing out.
He's in it.
What about Cheech? Is he in it as well?
Ah, Cheech. He can piss off Cheech. I don't even know if he's still alive, to be fair.
Bless him.
Rest in peace, Cheech.
And there's a young son with glasses who is a bit weird. As these young kids tend to be in films. Like he's in pain, gets headaches or something. Seizures, maybe.
Yeah, and he's kind of in tune. If there ever there's something a little bit strange, these kids are in tune with them. They see it coming a little while before.
It's either them or the dog. And there's a dog in this called Sam, who, like, you know, it's one of those situations where the dog's probably going to die in some weird way. Luckily, we don't know what happens to the dog, actually. We know after the alpacas. Okay, so anyway, so the family's strange from the move. They're all kind of struggling to make dinner or something. They haven't had sex for ages, the mum and dad, not the rest of the family. The rest of the family, I don't know. The film doesn't go into that.
Glad.
So, what's going on?
So obviously she doesn't feel attractive because obviously she's had a mastectomy, so she's obviously having issues with that. Nicolas Cage is obviously trying to make her feel better by saying, look, I still bloody love you, darling, and I think you're bloody gorgeous. And I still would, to be honest. He says that at one point to so many. He does pretty much say that in so many words. When they're sort of getting down to it and everyone else in the house is kind of doing various things, a meteor crashes in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
Garden, if you're not from America or Australia.
Their garden's lovely, though. It gets more lovely after the meteor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's delightful.
It's like a wave of colour that sort of flashes out from it. In the story, it's like it's an unknown colour. Like, we've never seen this colour before. We can't describe it. In the film, it's purple. But I mean, if you're going to go for any colour,
you sometimes feel, you know.
Go on.
You know when someone says, like, talks about your perception of colour, like what someone describes red to be, might not look anything like that in someone else's eye. So you try to describe it, you go, well, it's red like bloody ketchup, isn't it? But then someone else's perception of ketchup might be different as well.
Yeah, I always think it's weird. So if you look, you know, on a really sunny, beautiful summer's day, if you're looking at the countryside and there's like the brown mud bits and the green grass and the green leaves and the brown bark of the trees and the sky's blue and the sun's really yellow, those colours all seem to complement each other really, really well. And I think, is that just because we're sort of referencing that against the fact that it's a summer day? Or is that just...
it's a summer's day.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you are right. It's but the colour's purple, is what I'm saying.
I understand what you're saying, like, especially with this colour out of space stuff, is that we see colour in such a narrow spectrum.
Yeah.
That we want to see all the other colours as well, for God's sake.
If your name...
I don't want to see them all.
If you discovered a new colour and your name was...
Yep.
Hugh Brown, what would you call it?
Hugh Brown. I don't think I'd call it brown because everyone knows what brown is. I'd call it like, it'd be like an unknown word, a noise that no one's ever made before.
Yeah, that's not going to catch
on. Yeah. No, it's not. Sorry. You put me on the spot there, Luke.
Sorry. Call it. It's difficult. It's difficult. Pample. That's too close to purple. Okay, anyway, we'll come back.
Pample. It sounds like pimples are. So, yeah, so basically when the meteor crash lands, the young boy kind of sees loads of colours in the house, and then goes a bit terrified.
Yeah.
When they go out there to see it, the rock is like emitting this color, which is like pulsating out everywhere. It's also like sinking into the ground.
Yeah.
And so Nathan, played by Nicolas Cage, also says that there's like a horrific smell. He hates it, doesn't he? Stinks.
He's the only one that seems to notice it, though.
Yeah. What do you reckon it smells like?
Tarragon.
I reckon it smells like the worst rotten eggs you can ever imagine. He's like, bloody hell, who's dropped one?
No, it's probably more like what is it? I think it might be tarragon. What's that flavour? Some people can't. No, coriander. Some people, the smell or the flavour just doesn't agree with their taste buds. Is that what it's saying?
Yeah, a lot of people think it tastes like soap.
Hmm. I like it.
Mm, soapy.
Yeah.
You would.
So all this happens. The next morning, the news people arrive and interview Nicolas Cage, and then Ward arrives as well, and he's looking at the.
I'm just remembering that when the interview gets shown on TV.
Yeah.
Look at the state of my bonnet. No one could give me a comb. Yeah. So what happens?
Ward arrives and he's like, I'm going to test the water. This is weird. They're kind of like friends, and he's also flirting with the daughter now. And that's the point where Nicolas Cage says, come and look at me alpacas. And he milks them. He's well into those alpacas.
Yeah. Squeeze and pull.
Yeah.
The teat.
I don't know what happens from here.
So basically, Ward tells them not to drink the water.
Yeah.
And he tries to convince the mayor to kind of like do something about it, but she doesn't want to scare off the hydro dam developers. So she's like, I'll be all right. It's a meteor. It's a bit of a weird color. Also, the mayor is like a 25-year-old woman, I was thinking, which is great.
Yeah,
great. Absolutely wonderful. But I was a bit like, who's this? The bloody mayor. I wonder how she got into that. I want a film about that. I want a film about a hotshot young female mayor and how she became the mayor of Arkham. Not about this meteorite.
Yeah.
Boring. Yeah, so, and then obviously we do get a moment where wait, I don't think it's yet, but
what?
But I think it's, but is it the crew? The crew arrived to interview Nathan. That's later. Sorry. I've jumped ahead.
I think that's that morning, isn't it? All the news crew arrive, interview him, and
I think just before that is when Jack becomes like obsessed with the well, which is like emitting some sort of sound or color or sense that he's kind of drawn to.
Also, the grass is like growing purple flowers now. There's lots of that color starts to infect everything.
Yeah. And we see this weird little insect come out of the well as well.
Yeah.
And that flies around.
There's some CGI bits in this film that I just wish you didn't see that so in front of the camera. They could have had that flicking around somewhere that maybe could have hidden the CGI a little bit better. But it's fine.
It looked like CGI of a little fairy or something you'd see in a mid-90s fantasy film.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly what it looked like.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It did look like that.
Okay, so I don't know what happened. So
not long after this, Nathan's been interviewed by the local news, and they sort of ask him what he thinks it was and all this stuff. But on the news, Nathan's like really panicking. He becomes really self-conscious. He's like, look at the state of me. My hair is all over the place. So I come across like a, and they question him. They say, have you been drinking? And he's a bit like, he goes into unnecessary detail about how much he's been drinking. He's like, I like a bit of bourbon in the evening, but I only have a little bit now. It's just pointless. It's like, why would that be on the news? Have you been drinking? Yeah. So he comes across like a bit of a fool.
And at the same time, the mum's making dinner. Fix that bit, right?
Yeah.
Okay. She's making dinner. She's chopping some veg. You know it's going to go bad. I don't think you know if it's going to go as bad as it does get. She like lops off the ends of the carrots and lops off the ends of her fingers. Doesn't realise what she's done. They take her to the hospital. The kids stay behind. I think that's when more freaky stuff starts to happen around this part. The alpacas are running away, or they keep appearing where they shouldn't be appearing.
So there's a weird thing where Nicolas Cage tells the son to put the alpacas away, and he like leads them away, but then they kind of appear back where they were initially. Is that right?
Yeah. There's a lot of weird stuff like this in this film. It's like, I don't understand the logic of it, but I think that's fine. Like, it's supposed to be a bit of a mindfuck, so just go with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So any inconsistencies or what you would consider plot holes, I kind of just assume that they're there on purpose.
Yeah.
We're meant to be experiencing the sort of the fever dream, the mind fuck at the same time.
Yeah. Like Nicolas Cage is getting increasingly itchy. Like something in the shower, like a jellyfish that pops out of the shower.
And he shits himself and he screams. And then when he's harvesting his tomatoes as well, they're all like misshapen, inedible.
He really loses his temper
with them, because Teresa comes down and goes, the bloody internet's gone again, and he goes, look at these bloody tomatoes, and he starts throwing them in the bin.
He's probably slam dunks them.
He says slam dunk as well.
Okay. Yeah,
he's given like free rein to essentially be as much as Nicolas Cage crazy as he can be.
Yeah
and he does, you know.
Yeah. Okay. So,
which is good.
So I think from here we've got the little kid who's looking at the well, which is where the water's been mainly infected around there. And he's there with the dog, and it starts flashing at him in the colour. The dog disappears. We imagine he dies, but we don't really see what happens to it.
Do we hear a noise like a?
Yeah, we hear one of them. Yeah. Classic horror movie Yelp. At some point as well, What's the Flavors are at the hermit's little house, they're like, where's your cat? I can't remember when this happens, but they say, where's your cat gone? And then he says, if you saw it, you'd recognize it anymore. Because he knows what's going on. He's listening. He's got microphones in the floors or something like that. He's like, he talks about how there's all these things living in the floor. Yeah. Strange. Mm-hmm. Very strange.
And when Nathan and Teresa drive back from the hospital after the finger incident, the cat does run out in the road at one point, and it's like his eyes are glowing and its body's translucent. It's a little bit freaky.
Yeah. The alpacas are getting a bit mental. No one knows what's going on with them just yet. I don't know if they've like melted together yet.
something's going on, but I don't think we actually officially get to see it. And there's obviously a part at night where Jack goes to the barn and then is screaming. We assume that it's because he's seen the alpacas or something's going down. And everyone kind of runs down. Teresa runs to Jack's aid. This is pretty gruesome as well.
This is why, I mean, this part probably wouldn't happen in a sort of a more higher brow film. And this is why I think I kind of love that this film just does whatever. It's like really punky sort of attitude. It's like, yeah, if we want to go a bit mental with it, let's fuse the mum and the son together. We'll have the little son's cute face poking out of her back. And they're like just whining in pain.
And like I almost felt like, yeah, so obviously these sort of, the colour shoots these bolts of lightning out of the barn. And Teresa's kind of holding Jack like this. And as the lightning sort of goes onto them, they end up fused together. Yeah. To the point where they're like in some horrible, deranged mass of limbs, and they do look like burns victims. Almost to the point where I'm like, Jack gets sort of forgotten about. They seem to be like caring for
the mum. They don't talk about the kid at all. Yeah.
Jack's kind of on the back. It's almost like they can't quite comprehend what's happened.
Yeah, like she's lying on the sofa. And she's like in pain. And then Lavinia's like, yeah, I think she's reabsorbing him. As if it's, it can happen. Sometimes happens.
It can happen. I think she's reabsorbing him again. Yeah, I mean, he was born from her, and now.
Why not?
Yeah, so it's pretty gruesome. And the creature, not creature effects as such, but the sort of body horror effects here are pretty good. Everything looks wet.
Yeah, that's what I like. Sticky.
Looks pretty creepy.
I don't understand. So they put her in the attic. They're like, we can't have her in the living room where she's comfy. The attic is where this kind of thing belongs. You can't have this in the front room, sticking up the carpet.
Just get her out of the way, I think. I think that's the best thing to do, is that, like, you know, up in the attic where she belongs, on a horrible mattress on the ground, to die peacefully.
Have you looked in the Wikipedia?
They're making so much...
Go on, sorry.
No, go on, what does it say?
The Wikipedia description of the mum-son combination. Nathan and the other children carried a monster into the attic where they struggled to decide what to do about the miserable gibbering thing.
I mean, that's the point. Like, they're both obviously in absolute agony.
Yeah.
And even though it would be obviously the most difficult thing to do ever, like, putting them out in their misery seems like the most logical thing, because they are in agony. But again, I don't think anyone can quite comprehend the extent of what's happened.
Nicolas Cage decides to take matters into his own hands. He grabs a shotgun and goes out to the alpacas. Because he thinks the alpacas did it, maybe? I don't know.
Bloody alpaca sick motherfuckers!
So here's what I'm... So they tastefully shot the alpacas. Not with a shotgun. The camera, and it's like you just see flashes of their faces, so you kind of left to imagination as to what the hell that thing looks like. But he shoots it, he gets blood all over his face. It has that kind of weird, more low budget, blood spatter effect where it's like
this bit looks
Mandy-ish.
This thing looks very much like Mandy-ish, but also like The Thing, because we kind of see the alpacas all fused together, these close ups of these what I assume is mostly practical effects.
Yeah.
Reminds me of the dogs in the when they're gnawing their way through the bars in The Thing. So this was pretty creepy.
He shoots down, gets blood, like a mask of blood over his face, and goes back into the house. He's going to shoot the mum. Didn't he mention the son? But then he decides against it.
Yeah, it's like the son is just a bonus, like a bonus kill.
Yeah. So. So, I don't know. What's the name? The kids are like, we need to get out of here. Dad's lost his mind. His skin's now turning like leathery, where he's been scratching. He's started to mutate in some way as well.
And it's almost like we're made to think that the meteorite or the color or whatever this thing is, is getting to him psychologically. Because every now and again, he does sort of go from being quite calm and collected to just being absolutely insane and almost putting on this ridiculous accent, which is obviously what you said was the Donald Trump impression.
Sounds to me like Donald Trump. But, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's almost like he's been studying, right, what psychopath can I emulate in my next performance? And he's been watching a lot of Trump and he's gone, yeah, I'm going to do a bit of a Trump. complete with leathery skin.
The Ward character doesn't really show up for a long time, does he? I don't think he does much or anything until right at the end. Because the kids are kind of like stuck now with crazy dad, monster mum, and the dog's gone.
I think Ward is kind of we're made to think, isn't he doing some stuff with Chong, like doing some things?
He finds Chong like it's just like a corpse, like he's all. No, I think that's later on.
I think that's a little bit later. Yeah. I think that's obviously what you're doing this whole time.
So, I think it's around here, the older kid, they're about to get out of there, and the older kid hears the dog in the well. He's like, I need to get the dog out. Which you would say is stupid, but if it sounds like it's in pain, I think I would. But he climbs in, and like a wave of light swallows him up. He can't get away from it. Although he puts his goggles on, so I was like, I wonder if that's going to save him. But I don't think it does. I'm going to hear from him.
Kind of like bursts out of the water, kills him. And also, obviously, Nathan at this point is preparing to kill Teresa, but can't bring himself to do it. I think we kind of think that maybe he's done it, but then he doesn't.
Yeah.
And after what happens in the well, Lavinia goes a bit nuts. She's losing her grip on sanity. She's
why does she do this? Does this make any sense? This is one of those things. I don't know if this actually makes that much sense at all. Why is she self-mutilating and putting like Wiccan symbols on her body? I don't know.
I guess we're kind of just made to think that the color affects people in different ways. Yeah. Some people lose their sanity in one way. She loses it in another. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting. There's a bit at the end. I've just remembered, which we'll talk about. So they're trying to get away from the dad. He grabs the door, shoves her in the attic and says, feed your mum. The mum is now monstrified, is like crawling on lots of legs.
The mum is now something out of Dead Space, right? This horrible creature of limbs and, I mean, pretty terrifying. And again, the CGI is pretty cool in this. I think it's not too, doesn't look too bad.
I think it was good. Like the mum's head kind of like comes, it's like on a little, it kind of pokes out. It looks bizarre and weird. I don't know why it's like a little slobbering all over her, but it is. By the way, so like, I know this is a Lovecraft story, so it's got that going for it. But when I think of that kind of Lovecraftian horror, you know, you watch The Void, I was like, I feel like it's missing something.
Yeah.
I feel like this captures it much better, but maybe that's because it is a Lovecraft story. But my mind of cosmic monsters, I think this does it a little bit better.
I agree.
Ward arrives with the sheriff and they break into the attic room to save her. And you see the mother monster in all her glory. And then they don't shoot it.
Yeah.
Jack Nicholson, Nicolas Cage shoots it. So he changes his mind again. He's normal again now.
Make it your mind, for God's sake.
And as they're going to leave,
Donald Trump, wherever you are,
as they're going to leave, the well erupts with light again. Nicolas Cage goes to shoot the light, but the sheriff shoots Nicolas Cage. So he's dead. And Ward is trying to leave, the daughter says she can't leave. And then is this around here? Because when does the tree attack the sheriff?
So the tree attacks the sheriff and Ward and the sheriff go to Ezra. So I think they go to pick up Ezra to kind of like save him.
Okay. Yeah. There.
And when they go in, they find his corpse and there's like a recording playing. It says a lot of things about the colors trying to remake Earth into something it knows. So obviously it's an alien force. The corpse like implodes, doesn't it? There's like a...
Yeah. Like the light sort like of shines out of it. Like a weird
implosion.
Yeah.
And then the sheriff, a tree comes to life, grabs and kills the sheriff, and Ward runs away. And he goes back towards the house where Lavinia is kind of standing, looking at the well. Color explodes at the well, and this is like the money shot, really, isn't it? As the the color goes up into the sky in this big sort of tower of light, very Marvel Cinematic Universe
yeah,
ending. Yeah. Obviously, we get that a lot, don't we?
I think it was great. Like you see the sort of the Lovecraftian entities. You see like weird otherworldly alien worms and stuff, and there's the Wiccan symbol she's carved into her head is like a totem on this other planet, some sort of religious symbol or something. It's interesting. It's really good. It feels very Richard Stanley to me from what I've seen of his stuff. And it's insane. The visuals are crazy. They don't quite work, but they do in a weird way. They're a little bit rough, a little bit dated, but to me they still work. And Nicolas Cage is back alive in the house somehow, and the whole family's there, but he's trying to grab Ward and kill him for some reason. Who knows?
So he's like an apparition. It's like an apparition of him. He speaks in all his family's voices. So he's like an embodiment of them, isn't he?
Yeah.
Ward. Space and time is unraveling at this stage.
Oh, yeah, there's some really good visual effects where their faces like aren't moving, or bits of their bodies aren't moving when they are. So Ward escapes. He climbs into the wine cellar. It all explodes above him. And then when he comes out, it's just all it's like a big ashen barren plains. Then it ends. Well, there's like an epilogue of Ward standing on the electro hydro dam, and he says the colour's gone, but he ain't drinking the water.
Yeah.
And then that's it. It's an interesting one. I've got some trivia for you if you're up for it.
I'm up for some trivia, Luke. Always, you know me.
Okay, man. So number one is a bit of the name game for you. The story we're looking for, the name we're looking for, rhymes with the shadow over Innsmouth. Okay. This
rhymes
story.
What, sorry?
The shadow over Innsmouth, which is a Lovecraft story. I've got to pronounce it that way. You'll understand. This story is about an ungodly mustache that has grown over poor Lynn's top lip.
Over whose top lip, sorry?
Lynn.
Lynn.
Yeah.
An ungodly mustache. And what is it supposed to rhyme with?
The shadow. The shadow over Innsmouth.
The 5 o'clock shadow over Lynn's mouth.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Number two. What do Nicolas Cage and Richard Stanley and Indiana Jones, although my things corrected this to Indian Jones. What do Nicolas Cage and Richard Stanley and Indiana Jones have in common?
They all own a whip.
You probably do, yeah. But the answer you're looking for is they all went in search of the Holy Grail. They've all gone for a legitimate search for it. Okay, so number three. What do the H and P stand for in H.P. Lovecraft? Is it A, Honest Daniel, B, Horatio Dangerous, C, Handy Dandy, D, Horrendously Dapper, or E, Howard Phillips?
Some of those you did HD, didn't you? And other of them you did HP.
You figured out
didn't
my
you?
Yeah. You figured out my
Howard Phillips.
Yeah. Interestingly,
horribly racist.
Yeah. Interestingly, the main character is called Ward Phillips, not the main character, the narrator. Ward Phillips, a black gentleman. Howard Phillips, Lovecraft. Ward Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay, number four. Which of these isn't a Lovecraft story? A, The Color Out of Space. B, Old Bugs. C, The Terrible Old Man. Or D, Hot Air.
Well, that's quite tough, actually, because I know there are some ridiculous names. I'm going to say the one is Old Bugs.
No, that's a real one. D, Hot Air. There's actually a story called Cool Air, which is also a ludicrous name. Okay, so number five.
Great one.
What is the name of the paperback book which Lavinia gets her spells from?
It's not a Necronomicon, but it's something similar, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a Necronomicon.
Necronomicon. Okay, yeah. There we go. I knew that.
It's like a little 80s horror paperback looking thing in this. It's cool. Okay, so yeah, we need to rate
it. I want to read it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I was a bit unsure of this going into it and sort of it during, but it went into some pretty nice places and it didn't feel too hammy, which I was obviously kind of expecting with Nicolas Cage, especially when he started going full Nicolas Cage. But yeah, and apparently it grew some bits, loads of cool things. And since like reminding myself of the short story, I think it captured a lot of it really well, even though obviously it's set in a completely different time period. But it kind of captured the otherworldly, unknown, strange, inhuman, bizarre time and space stuff really well. And the color that you can't even see with your eyes is purple. Just tell someone, just tell H.P. Lovecraft this. It's purple, mate. Come on.
Howard.
Yeah, purple, so I'm pretty.
Lovecraft.
Yeah. Come on, mate. So yeah, I was pretty into it. I think I'd give it a B.
Interesting. I really wasn't sure what to expect from this film. Like I said, it's a miracle that it got made. And I think it's amazing that Richard Stanley had to go through all of this 20 years, 30 years of craziness to make a pretty awesome fucking film. Like, it's a great film, I think. It's weird, it's horrific. It's got the sort of dirty, punky quality to it that I really like. And it's got all the Lovecraft vibes. I mean, I'm giving this an A minus. I really, really liked it.
Oh, awesome. It's a pretty good, like, when's the last time we had as good a Lovecraft adaptation as this?
I think this is one of the best Lovecraft films. I can't think of anything that really captures.
Okay.
Maybe not the best, but it really captures the Lovecraft vibe.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it was a very nice surprise. And let's talk about the soundtrack as well. So it's Colin Stetson did Hereditary, which I like listen to all the time. But this is like, it captures, it's like the synth wave horror creepy stuff, which I absolutely love. But this soundtrack is absolutely chock full of it. So if you enjoy that sort of stuff, check it out.
Yeah. Have you seen the YouTube videos of Colin Stetson? He does the endless saxophone sort of playing where it's like he's breathing in at the same time as breathing out or something. So he's kind of breathing in through his nose and pumping it out of his mouth.
Showing off.
Yeah, but that's how he makes that sound that we know from Hereditary. That's sort of like a droning brass sound. That's how he makes it. Yeah, it's fantastic. It is good.
Talented man.
Next week we're going to do Underwater. But that's not today. That's next week. So, is there anything else you want to say?
There's nothing else I want to say apart from just take care of yourselves and watch this film. If you haven't watched this film and you've listened to this whole podcast, first of all, you've ruined it for yourself. Second of all, go and watch the bloody film because it's a good one.
Yeah,
very nice.
So
I think it would have definitely got into my favourites of last year if we'd done that episode prior to this.
Yeah, yeah.
After this, so.
Yeah, it definitely would have been for me. Okay, so become a patron over at patreon.com/HawkandCleaver. Thanks to Kovac Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, consider giving us a rating review on iTunes. Head over to Facebook, join the Facebook group, Horror Hangout Board of Advisors. Thanks to my co-host Ben for being our dude.
Thanks so much, Luke. It's been a pleasure.
Cool, man. I'm going to stop the thing.
Take
now.
Care. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.